Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is July 31st, 2017. I am completely stunned it's gone that fast this year, but thank God it has. I wanted to thank you for joining us and remind you to please share our radio station. I have a bit of good news. My radio program has been approved to be aired on a local FM station called KEPW.org. I interviewed Rick Gold here a few months back, and you can find it on the internet. They play music and interviews and things like that, but mostly music. So, and also they're going to be playing Nuclear Hot Seat. So we're going to be getting that together in the next couple of weeks, spreading the news about really the nuclear catastrophe that we have and just the litany of challenges that we have going on our planet, that it's really imperative and it's up to us to face it. This is our generation. Those of us that are listening, and you probably are among those that are listening who are active because you're listening to this radio station. So thank you for that. In that vein this morning, we have a returning guest. He's a citizen journalist, a friend of mine, Ed Oz. We were talking about a topic. He brought up a topic last week that I thought was fascinating. Ed, thank you for joining us. I really want to thank you. You can find Ed on Facebook. So it's Ed Oz, O-Z, just like it sounds. He's out of Lowell, Oregon, in case there's other Ed Ozes. So thanks, Ed, for joining us.
Thank you very much. Great to hear the news about the local radio show.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. Yeah.
And I'd like to introduce myself to the people. I've published a book about how to be happy. But actually, one of my main interests in life, it seems to be, is how the media is affecting people, how the media steers people, how the media is pretty much controlling people at this point in time. And I have a pretty unique viewpoint because I come from a media family. My family was involved in movies, in radio, in television commercials, and pretty much everybody in my family, including my uncles and aunts, were involved in the industry. And I grew up in 1950s, 1960s LA, pretty much in the industry. And where my fascination came with how people are manipulated was in about when I was about 10 years old. In 1960, I read a book by a gentleman called Vance Packard, called The Hidden Persuaders, which for a short time actually made it to the top of the New York Times bestseller chart. And what Vance Packard did in that book is he revealed to people exactly how Madison Avenue was manipulating the American public, the techniques they were using, the subliminal messages they were sending, the psychology they were using and how they were basically creating a consumer culture and then creating the needs and then fulfilling those needs. And I became fascinated that a culture as huge as America could actually be kind of led around by the nose. And I've studied this subject all of my life.
And I got involved in the end. What year was that book published, do you think?
1957. And it is still full of five-star reviews at Amazon. You can still buy it brand new, even though the references in it are dated because the advertising he talks about is advertising from the 50s and the 60s. The information in that book is still as valid as the day it was written. And I really would like for people to go to Amazon and, if nothing else, read the reviews that people have written about that book. To me, there has never really been another book on that subject written as good as that one and as thorough as that one. And that brings us to today's subject, which is a term that probably is meaningless to most of you people. So I'm going to explain the term. And the term is hive mind. And what I'm going to explain to you is how the hive mind, which is something we've always had, has been hijacked, basically, to manipulate what you're seeing, what you're hearing on the news every single day. So first, let me define the hive mind. Human beings, whether you believe in religion or not, it's scientifically provable that we have a connection with each other. Our minds oftentimes think the same things at the same time. You know, the easiest example is, boy, I knew that person was going to say that, or I knew that person was going to call me.
Yeah, well, like lots of us are talking about the hive mentality. We're sort of becoming aware of that also.
And there's nothing bad about the hive mind. It's the fact that, you know, it's probably how many of the great accomplishments of humanity have been done is people thinking, wow, this would be, you know, really incredible to build a bridge across this river or whatever. So there's nothing bad about the hive mind. What has become bad about the hive mind is that those that wanted to control people, kings, queens, emperors, throughout history, never had access to the hive mind. They could find out what was going on through talking to people, and they could find out by reading books and reading newspapers, et cetera, et cetera. But that was basically looking at the hive mind a year ago, a month ago, 10 years ago. And we're now in an age, I mean, where the hive mind is completely exposed through search engines and through Facebook and through Twitter and other similar platforms. Let me give you a simple example of how the hive mind could be leveraged. Okay. And let me do it with economics, because that's something we all kind of understand. Let's say you're the gentleman, one of the gentlemen at the very top of Google, and you're an investor, and you're saying, oh, I'm going to go put 10 grand in the market tomorrow. So you're working at Google, and it's midnight. You basically use their artificial intelligence to analyze the billions of searches that are going on in real time at any second, and you go, what company are people talking about? And all of a sudden, you find people are talking about these various companies, but you notice a company over here that no one has really ever heard of, that millions of people are talking about something very wonderful about this company at midnight. So you take your investment and you go do your calls while the price is locked before the market opens up on those companies. And you have just leveraged all of the minds in the world to make your money.
So you think essentially that that's why we have the Facebook, the social media, so the people that are actually investing in stocks, the big mega billionaires, they're looking at the data that these companies are feeding them?
Well, I don't think that's why they started. I don't think that's why any of these things started. I actually think Google started because somebody wanted to organize the internet. That was a great idea. But I think what has happened is, as we have all become connected to the internet, Facebook just past 2 billion users. They have, while we have been going along doing this, they have looked at all of this data, because data is gold, and they've said, how can we leverage this data? What can we do with this data? Now, people think, okay, well, they use the data to sell advertisements. They use the data to market. Well, they do, but they also use the data for many, many other things. And I'm going to interject 3 warnings that we have gotten recently from 3 very intelligent people. And that is Stephen Hawking, I got some headlines up here, warns artificial intelligence could end mankind. And that was on BBC. And then we have Bill Gates here warning about
it. And I think that ending mankind is part of the program, don't you think? I mean,
well, absolutely, absolutely. But all I'm saying
I think they've decided whoever
it is. Hawking is a very, Hawking is really kind of neutral on it. I mean, if mankind ends, mankind ends. He's a scientist. He's just basically throwing out what he sees. Okay? I mean, well, because Hawkins has basically told us to get off the planet.
Hawkins offends me. I mean, here's a guy
no,
who
I'm, no, I'm
100%
not, I'm not talking
dependent
these
on
people up. I'm not talking these people up at all. I don't like Bill Gates at all. Okay? Yeah. Bill Gates gave a warning about this, and the latest one has been Musk. And Musk basically went to the governor's convention about 3 weeks ago and said that if we don't start regulating artificial intelligence, it could end us. And basically, when, a few other people in the next few days basically talked against Musk and said he's exaggerating, Musk just basically came back and said, look, I'm one of the richest people in the world. I have access to the best artificial intelligence out there. You guys haven't even seen what it can do. So the news has kind of done this. These guys are alarmists, and the news always puts up pictures of the Terminator when they talk these stories to kind of
do you think Elon Musk
seem.
Does this? Do you think he participates in this let's see what people are thinking thing? You think that's part of how he's
absolutely.
Making his gazillion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's one of the most influential technologists on planet Earth, and all of these people are all connected. So, basically, these warnings, what I'm trying to tell your audience is these warnings are not about the Terminator coming out and shooting you. What these warnings are about is these guys have seen how artificial intelligence, you see, you have billions of people literally searching every second. That's way too much data for a human mind to deal with. There's no way a human mind can take this data and say, wow, I'm going to take advantage of it. I got to find out what companies people are talking about or whatever without artificial intelligence between. Artificial intelligence can take a billion thoughts and siphon them down to what's important. Artificial intelligence can take all of the inputs of all of the license plate scanners in the United States and combine those with all of the information Google Maps and Apple collect for Apple Maps from every vehicle, and they can basically map every single person in the United States.
Okay, so I have a question, Ed.
Sure.
This is the thing. I know that you've been researching. I know you spent a lot of time researching this, so it's kind of an out-of-the-field question, but this whole idea, do you think that it's a way like, kind of at the heart, this sort of says that we have been in the past genetically modified. Like, that's just part of, like, that whole theory that humans didn't just evolve, that we were some type of an inbred, right? Is that part of
this
thinking?
I agree with you. I agree with you on this. I mean, I agree with you.
Well, I don't know
you.
If I've made my determination on that one, but I've heard some very compelling arguments, and this would fit into it for this reason, because when they're done with, like, when they want to improve the species, how do they do it? Right now, they are literally the only judgment a rational human being could come up with for nuclear pollution is it is intentional. You cannot really 100% fundamentally just say it was for greed, because nobody in their right mind would contaminate the entire planet with nuclear pollution, knowing that it lasts for hundreds of thousands of years. So that's exactly what makes me think that this is part of like a way to manage the hive. Because that's really how we're being treated. Well, like we're part of the Borg. It's like resistance is futile.
People on Facebook see that my posts go everywhere, from satire to stuff like this. And oftentimes they ask me, you know, well, what is it really that you're trying to get across to people? And I put it this way. My foe is the homogenization of human beings. Okay, and that is what I see happening. We are being homogenized into one person, and this goes exactly with what you're saying. The homogenization started. See, this is where things really switched. Back in the 20s and the 30s, you and I have discussed Edward and Bernays. We've even discussed it on this program, I believe. Edward Bernays was the guy who wrote two great books. One was called Propaganda, and the other had an even scarier title, and that was The Engineering of Consent. And what Edwin Bernays did is he figured out how you can manipulate an entire population of people using media. Edwin Bernays came up with the concept of that put marketing on its heel. I mean, that basically turned marketing upside down. Up until Edwin Bernays, marketing was based on finding a need and filling that need. After Bernays, that changed to create the need, then fill the need.
Right.
So what he did was he figured out how you could like get people to accept automobiles. I mean, back in the 40s, everybody rode the bus. It was the whole idea of taking a car everywhere was silly, because there was rail everywhere and there was buses everywhere. Automobiles had to be created as a need. And that was done by showing them in movies, showing them on television, glamorizing them, making people feel that if their neighbor had one and they didn't have one, they were like, you know, caught out of the picture. You know, it also helped when GM bought all the rail systems and trashed them. But all of this was part of the same thing. They created the need for automobiles. We never really needed them. We had a system in place already that worked perfectly well for moving people back and forth to the cities and the suburbs, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the ultimate advancement of Bernays, because before they had to spend years creating the need and kind of seeding it into the public's mind as something that they absolutely had to have, like, say, an iPhone. Okay, it takes a long time to get the momentum build up to where everybody goes, I have to have this thing that costs $1,000. Now, with artificial intelligence and this mountain of data coming in, they don't even have to create the need. They can go out and look at what are people talking about. Now, where it ties into your nuclear work is, look at this. People are upset about this news story over here about this leaking waste at this particular nuclear plant. What can we do about that? What stories can we release that will appeal to the same type of person that is going to be looking at this tonight? What crazy thing can we feature in the news this morning that will totally distract them? This is how the hive mind's being used. This is how it affects you and me. They can predict very accurately. As you and I have discussed, the billionaires whose names I forget, the people that finance Bannon and are behind Bannon, run a database company. That database company claims to have 2,000 points of data on every single voter in the United States. Now, wow. A point of data can be, what type of dog food do you buy? Okay? I mean, it's not like, you know, it's where you win every day, but it's all of your grocery membership cards analyzed for what do you buy, how many kids do you have, what pets do you have? Okay, all of this stuff is analyzed and is used to manipulate how you're going to vote in the next election. And this is public knowledge. This isn't even the stuff they're doing behind our back. this is right out in the open. So this is where it becomes very scary, because they know
not only is it out in the open, but people are agreeing with it. I mean, they're seeing in the back of their heads.
Good point.
They may not be participating in it yet, but they're like, oh, well, it's coming and it's here. And just wait, in 50 years, we're all going to have chips. And we may not agree with it. We may not like it, but we're sort of like, ugh, that's the way it's got to go. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Isn't that part of the programming, though, Ed? Isn't that part of like what Bernice said? That's part of the process.
Well, it was interesting because one company in the USA, you probably saw the story this week, has offered all their 30,000 employees chips. And here's the way they were selling them to the employees, which absolutely, I mean, I laughed out loud when I read it. They told the employees, not only would you be able to unlock doors without having to use those clumsy cards, you could use the copy machine and buy things at the vending machine. Oh. So I'm going to have a microchip implanted in me so I can use a copy machine? I mean, the way, it's just like a by the way, right?
Yeah.
It's no big deal.
Only it's not quite so well that those group of people. You know what's interesting? You heard recently that story, those group of people that got the microchip in their hand, right? Well, what's interesting is I thought about this, and I haven't had a chance to research it, but those people got infections in the company in America. In Mexico, they have been microchipping the rich people for about 10 years now because they've been getting kidnapped. So they want to be microchipped, right? But they
sure
don't get, or at least I haven't heard of stories of infections like this one. So maybe that's part of the process that they
I didn't hear the infection stories. I'm going to.
Oh yeah, this firm, like within 24 hours, people had big welts on their hands. Their bodies were like, and red streaking up their arms, like they were like, "Get this thing out of me." So it didn't go well there for some people. Not everybody went easy. So
you know why? You know why? Because even if it's sterile, and even if everything's 100% perfect, that's an energy disruptor that they're putting into.
That's,
and your body's going to react.
That's
that
true.
That thing is like right in your nervous system. And it's like some people are probably just, it's going to be fine with some people, and other people, their body's probably going to totally reject it.
So maybe it's just that the super rich don't have any really high vibrational energy.
Well, actually, what they're probably putting in the super rich is GPS chips, which are a little different. Those are locators.
Okay.
Those are what, like, in the spy movies when Tom Cruise...
Jules talked about this on a show that she did last week about how they were using turtles and putting them in pets to kind of see how they would do on animals. I mean, and if anybody does not listen to First Cup in the morning, before the First Cup with Jules, honestly, you're missing out. Her show... I have to like take it in. I listen to it when I work, and sometimes I have to like listen to one show over 2 days because I'm like steaming while I'm working. The steam starts coming out of my ears and the stuff is disclosing.
And you brought up a great point that I'd like to like scare people a little bit with.
We don't want to scare people. We want people to face reality.
No, I think I'm talking about scaring people into being aware of something, and that is, we think all of this chip stuff and electronics in humans and animals is like some new idea. Okay, well, as you're probably aware, Lonnie, in 1964, the CIA implanted microphones and electronic devices in cats and put those cats outside the Russian embassy in Russia, hoping that they would be adopted and the people would let them in, and they did. So we're talking about ideas that go back to the 60s, implanting electronic devices in animal, and it can't be seen because it's inside the animal. And and here's another thing about this microchip thing. Folks, we're at the same point we were when Ronald Reagan said, oh, we're going to drug test everybody. Okay. If everybody had said, no, you aren't, we would have no drug testing today.
That's true. It's the same thing like with the police brutality with what, I mean, really with Trump coming out on Friday saying, oh, just throw them, you know, don't be kind to these thugs, assuming they're all guilty and assuming that
they're called suspects for a reason. Right. And then, you know.
But honestly, this is true. If we do not stand up to this, like we have seen an increase in police violence over the last 15 to 20 years, I would say 20 years, right before 9/11, when Bill Clinton came in and he started running drugs and there was cocaine everywhere. People just accepted the violence.
And I want to make a point to your audience that will make this graphically clear in their mind. If you go back 20 years, and you look at a picture of a bunch of police officers, they aren't in military gear. They're actually dressed like police officers.
Right. That's right. And they didn't go through military training, and they don't call people the enemy. They don't refer to us as the enemy, and they don't look at us all as if we're not. You're either on the inside, and it's all that military mentality.
Well, and there's a giant, and as you know, these costumes they wear, these Halloween costumes, there's a giant psychology behind not showing faces. Hiding faces is really the ultimate terror you can put on people, because there's no communication, there's no facial communication, there's no, I mean, it's just like, and that's what they've done. Cops come in into any situation now and they're faceless. They could be robots.
Well, this is why they arrested that guy up in Portland who is photographing the police, because he gets their faces. And you know what? They've now entrapped him, and they basically arrested him.
I saw
him.
That.
And his court of his
parole. Go look at the video. Go look at the video of this on Lonnie's wall. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He basically, I forget the name of it. I'll look it up in a second, but he basically was videotaping people at the Trump protests, and the cops were inciting violence. So he was videotaping them. He's an older guy. Mm-hmm. And then he got arrested for harassment. Then he was let go. And now they've kind of picked on him because he videotapes police. And they basically arrested him. And part of his parole was that he could not come within 8 feet of a police officer, 12 feet, something like that. And there's videotapes of him and his friend walking down the street in Portland and the cops coming around the corner, passing by him. And he has to stand on the other side of the street. And so, and then a police car comes near around the corner to him. And then they arrest him because he came within proximity of the police.
Sure.
And now there's a new video out today, and it shows that he has been arrested for violating his parole. And the terms of this whole account are just beyond. But this is the whole mentality of fall in line, fall in line, fall in line. And it's
absolutely
honest. It's kind of beyond comprehension.
Well, and, you know, as I said about drug testing, you know, it all starts with people going, well, this isn't too bad. I mean, you know, it's like I sometimes feel like I'm the only man in my 60s in America who never took a drug test. I refused. Every situation where it was presented to me, I said, no thanks. I don't urinate and do cup for people. A lot of things I'll do, but that's not on the list of things I'll do. And yeah, it cost me a job or two along the way, but isn't it better to feel good about yourself? than to say, well, you know, it's not too bad. It is too bad. Any interjection into our privacy. And then, let's go back, 4 or 5 years ago, the NSA, well, it's not too bad that we're, like, monitoring all your phone calls. Right? No, it is bad. It is bad because individualism, interestingly enough, is what America was created from. And individualism is what they're trying to take away from everybody.
Well, they want
the hum. Yeah. And we, you know, it's.
But Ed, don't you think this is why it's important for us to speak up right now? Like, it's very, I believe it's very important for us to speak up right now, because with Trump doing this, he's got his entire cabinet filled with generals. They're telling the police to just rough up suspects. And, you know, if you can rough up a gang member, you can rough up a suspect in a car accident, or you could rough up somebody that
well,
you think
not
robbed
only that,
a bank.
You know, talk about the hive mind. Let me clarify something interesting, that an impression that the news has given everybody about that gang that is completely wrong. For Trump's political reason, he always portrays that gang as Mexican. And the truth is, none of them are Mexican. They're all from Central America. And why would they create a gang so horrible and so ugly? Because when they came here, the Mexican gangs all attacked them. So the Central American guys got together. But, you know, I hate gangs. I hate the whole concept. But the truth is, they're using, I mean, Trump is using that gang for politics. The reality about what he says is just more political stuff. And as I said, they can react to stuff so fast now that here's a good example. Remember when the story came out about Trump being a pussy grabber and that Access Hollywood video came out?
Yeah.
And everybody thought, oh, my God, Trump's really doesn't have a jab now. Everybody wrote him off. Well, if you go back to that little news period, you will find out that there were about 20 major stories that happened in the next 48 hours. They pummeled people with different news stories, different things, taking them emotionally different directions away from the pussy grabber thing.
Well, one of the things that came out, they were talking about the Pizzagate and then the emails from Hillary Clinton and blah, 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 blah. You know,
exactly.
Like, let's just be clear. They at the same time they dropped that video, they also dropped this whole business about the Hillary Clinton and her email server. And what's ironic about them picking on her email server is Paul Ryan has a private email server. Did you know that?
Oh, well, you know, this that whole thing. But, you know, who knows how Paul Ryan – did you know who Paul Ryan's best friend is?
No.
Rince Priebus.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
They're old school buddies. They play sports together. Their family hangs out. Their families hang out together. They are like brothers. Think
well, they're hardcore Republicans. I mean, this is the thing. That's probably why he got to where he's at. These people are very, very dedicated. The YouTube channel of where what we were talking about, the police finder, you can find him at Mike Blue Hair.
Mike Blue Hair, okay.
Yeah, and today's, this is there, he's talking about Amendment 8, you know, about excessive punitive damages, what they're telling him to do. It's so outrageous. It's not even justice. Like, it's worse than just us. It's actually picking on this guy because he's photographing police officers threatening people. Although I do have to say, they have been quite rude to these guys. Like, they are seriously the comments. But, you know, the police department in Portland has murdered people straight out on the streets. Like, their attitude is we're the enemy. My daughter left the Trump, you know, the anti-Trump protest the day after he was elected. She went down to City Hall spontaneously. Everybody was freaked out. She left when the cops rolled in because they came for trouble. She said, Mom, they looked like they were about to start a war. They were dressed for war, just like you said.
Oh,
they
yeah,
weren't
I saw
police
some
officers.
I saw some,
you know what, Ed,
I
speaking about
pictures.
That, look at how the police officers treated people in the 60s and 70s in the protests then. When there was huge protests.
Oh, I got roughed up. I got roughed up a bit, but it wasn't anything like what they do now.
Right.
I mean, you know, sure, there was always that friction. To be quite truthful, in the 60s, it's almost like the crowds were worse. The crowds of citizens that always came to protest against the protesters were worse than the cops.
Oh, really? The anti-protesters.
Yeah, they'd throw things at you and spit on you and do all of that sort of shit.
Oh, so they would do the roughing up for the cops.
Exactly.
That's, again, the hive mentality at work here, isn't it?
Well, speaking of the hive mentality, this is something that I really want to bring up with people, because you're talking about it's time we got to stand up, right? And even, I told you, even that Republican flake yesterday said, you know, it's time for the Republicans to put their foot down.
You mean Jeff Flake? You're not calling him a flake. His name is Jeff Flake. He's this
Jeff Flake. and which was amazing because he was a Republican. But here's my point. My point is, we are being run by a bully. And since when has America celebrated the bully? America celebrates the underdog, not the bully.
Well, what did George Washington
say? Every one of his staff now is bullying people.
This is the thing. We refuse to do the hallmark of being an American, really, when we fought this Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the people who won the, quote, good, the people who sided on the side of our Constitution, sided not to mistreat our prisoners and treat them with dignity and respect at all times. And that is the hallmark. That's part of who the American spirit is.
Exactly.
Now, granted, that whole thing was not granted to Black people or to people of color. And really, that gets down, or even women. But that gets down to the cultural thing, not our country. It gets down to where culturally people were not, women were not considered equal to men. Black people were not considered human. I mean, women and people of color
I often bitch about the way that that World War II created our consumer culture, but the one good thing that the World War II did was forced integration between blacks and whites because of the army. So, you know, that was really one good aspect of it, because, you know, they couldn't really separate them all out. In World War I, they did. In World War I, the blacks were all in their own, you know, units, but that didn't happen in World War II. So, you know, but here's where we are. Let's go back to, you know me, I'm a movie guy. We go back to the movies literally from the turn of the century of the 1900s, the 1910s, the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. What is the basic theme of almost any movie regarding a heroic person? That person saves someone else from a bully. What is every great Western? What's the plot? Our hero saves the people from the bully.
Yeah, but Ed, you got to admit,
we start living up to those standards we set for ourselves.
Part of that, though, is that violence saves. This is kind of an ongoing argument. This is the thing with Trump, though. People believe that things have gone awry because we've gotten too soft. Like, you've heard all the vitriol and the name calling to us so-called lefties, right? They've even
That's why the cops have only killed, 400 people in the last 2 years?
Look, they've manipulated the Bible. There's a quote in the Bible, I don't know which book it's in. It says, those who cleave to the right cling to God, those who cling to the left are of Satan, basically.
Right.
That's basically what it says. But you get the paradigm, the mentality, the propaganda here that goes on. But the issue is really not about, it's about the whole thing, the name calling. And this idea that, you know, we need to be tougher. In fact, I just posted something on my Facebook page. 5 years of studies have shown that corporal punishment does do nothing to make kids behave and only instigates insecurity in violent children. And I've had
I got corporal punishment from both my parents and my Catholic schooling, and I became a complete rebel against all of that by the time I was 15 years old.
Well, and other people believe it, that, you know, you got to give a firm hand. You got to, like, be violent, you know. I sincerely think we need to move beyond that. This is why we have war on our planet. It's time for us to
Be, and I don't think that people are, Lonnie, and, you know, I discuss this a lot on my wall on Facebook. I do not believe that people are naturally violent. I believe people can be riled up to be violent. But as far as people being naturally violent, it's like that video I posted a couple of weeks ago showing the 70 or 80 people forming a human chain to save that family that was pulled out to sea by the undertow. So here you have people of every race, every political persuasion, everything else, and in a moment of emergency, they all risk their lives to save someone they didn't know. And that is how humans really are. That's when we aren't being guided. You know, I mean, I almost think, I wonder what would have happened if we'd had a news crew there going, don't save them. We want to get good footage.
Actually, a young girl watched her sister drown doing that, and she's being convicted of murder. That's
doing
actually
what?
Watching her sister drown. There's a young woman who videotaped her sister drowning.
Oh, no. I followed that story. I followed that. Well, I didn't think it was her sister, but I followed a story similar to that where three teenagers filmed some old man drowning.
This was a girl that watched her sister drown. She was videotaping it. And they were in a car wreck, and they were having some kind of problem, and she couldn't get to it, so she just videotaped it instead of, like, doing everything she could to try to save her sister.
I know. But, I mean, you know, but that's the desensitization that we start with children from the moment we introduce them to television and video games.
Yeah, well, that's the reason to introduce your children to television and video games for a long time.
I'm very much in the majority of that, but I think video games are pretty much one of the worst things. I find them worse than movies, worse than media, worse than anything, because they totally submerge a young person into a reality where violence is king.
Well, not only that, the electromagnetic thing. I mean, this is why we have children with brain cancer. This is really, it really does give kids brain cancer to be close to Wi-Fi all the time. It is a terrible, terrible thing for children.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, all of these. But still, the mental, you know, as you know, everything we create in our life, we create out of our imagination. So if you have a child playing Grand Theft Auto and their imagination for 12 hours a day is involved in a world where they kill and rape and steal, that is what their future reality, that is what I call the raw material for their future. Because we go into our minds to go, what are we going to do? What are we going to be? Who's my hero? And that's the raw materials we create our lives out of. And we are fucking dumping garbage into kids as the raw material. And most parents don't even watch the games. They're, you know, the games take care of the kids. They're like babysitters. So the parents just ignore them. And if they really watched what was going on in these games, I think they would be shocked.
Well, it's kind of like this. There's this, you know, since this morning's conversation, I found this article by Dr. David G. Myers, and he talks about the hive mentality. And it says, psychologists call the phenomenon de-individuation. In certain situations, you can expect to be de-individualized, unlike conformity in which you adopt the ideas and behaviors of others for acceptance and inclusion. De-individuation is mostly unconscious and more likely to lead to mischief. That's where we're at today. This is
It was interesting because I did a post yesterday on consensus and how I really don't like our consensus culture because I feel that it stifles, you know, for to get consensus on everything before you try an idea stifles too much. And I got a lot of criticism and people were going, you know, Ed, you know, if you don't go with consensus, you're going to find out that your life is very difficult. And I said, yeah, my life has been difficult since as far as I can remember, because to me, consensus is homogenization and my ideas are too unique for me to want to throw them out there and ask everybody, okay, you play with this idea and tone it down a bit and give it back to me. No.
Well, consensus accepts the idea that everybody has to agree, right? And so one of the things that we're finding, this is where I agree with you on this. We need differentiation. We need each other. Yeah. We don't have to agree with all of our neighbors or like them, or we just have to live in harmony. And it's that fine tuning. It's like playing music. They're all different chords, but when they play together in harmony, it makes beautiful music. That's what we want our culture to become. And that makes the sweetness of humanity. And I really actually believe very deeply that music is a human need, and that's part of it because it teaches us to live in harmony. And so,
well, it's interesting because I often say those 200 years ago that lived in slavery, are much different than the work slaves, because those who lived in slavery 200 years ago were free to sing all day long. We aren't.
Well, they weren't free to sing all day long. They sang to keep themselves awake for 18 hours
a day.
Because it was
part of the African culture. Well, no, but because it was part of the African culture that they took with them, which is to sing while you work. See, singing while you work is a very natural thing. And like you said, it improves your vibrational energy. It takes you into a better place. There's no doubt about it. There have been psychological studies that have been done. The people that tend to sing all the time are some of the more well-balanced people. Hmm. So I agree with you. And I find it interesting, again, the homogenization of human beings. And that is, no, you don't sing. You listen to music from something stuck in your ear. Okay? Instead of just making the music like we all can naturally do.
Yeah, or creating our own songs. I've thought about that because, how many of us know? We know hundreds of songs that have been fed to us over the last 50, 60 years. I don't know, however old you are, songs of your own generation.
Right.
But we don't know cultural community songs. Like, we used to be taught cultural community songs, religious. I mean, I guess religious is as close as it gets to modern day music. But
well,
again,
it's
high. Hive mentality is just a very compelling subject.
We don't even expose to the different cultures. Like when I was, in Catholic school, white Irish Catholic school in Van Nuys, California, we knew every Negro spiritual song. We sang them all the time.
You call
them
Wait. Let me just stop you there. You said the N-word. That is like seriously like a faux pas for
that's,
a lot
no,
of people.
No, I know, because that is what they were called. What am I supposed to label it what they're called now? But back then they were called Negro spiritual songs.
Wow. Yeah, they are called. They're actually called.
And a big example of it was Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, which fucking I know inside and out because we sang it so many times.
What are those called? Those are called gospels or something. I don't know.
But I mean, what's interesting about it is at least we were exposed to that culture through that music.
Huh.
The cultural exposure that young people are getting from what I hear is very, very limited.
Well, we're all getting very, very limited. That's why people listen to this radio station, because we all have very, very limited, and it's all very controlled. I mean, you can go to the Alex Jones website and have that controlled media tell you what to think. You can go to MSNBC and have that controlled media tell you what to think. I mean, it's beyond comprehension what is not covered on the news on any of these stations. The fact that we are not perpetrating war on this
right
planet.
On. As I tell people, go to Alex Jones, then go over to MSN, and then go to Fox and find whatever it is that all three of them agree on, and that is the big lie. Right there.
Yeah.
Alex Jones and the conservative media agree on something, they're pulling the wool over your eyes. You know it. And Alex Jones is working on the other side of the river.
Yeah.
But it's great that we have shows like this. I mean, this is why I have so much hope for humanity, because, 30 years ago, there's no way you and I could be talking and exposing ourselves to an audience like this without huge expense. And now we're doing it using the internet. So I'm not saying everything about the internet. I'm saying the communication is good. One thing I I tell people to do, although it may sound silly, to protect a little bit of your individuality from this artificial intelligence analysis, is put information in Facebook and the search engines that has nothing to do with you. Because the great thing about algorithms is they don't know the difference between truth and lies or jokes. So I will often in Facebook talk about an upcoming trip I'm taking to Qatar.
What? Why?
And sure enough, in my email, totally different from Facebook, Google doesn't even own Facebook, I'll start getting advertisements for flights to Qatar.
Wow.
It's play with it. Okay?
I think the creepiest thing about Facebook is this. I'll have clients call me on my cell phone, and then Facebook sends me a friend request on Facebook for that person. Yes, it's very, very creepy. Like, I don't ask, I don't typically ever friend request clients of mine because of my business.
I'm the same way. When people go, you must have friended me without my knowledge, I go, I never send a friend request. That's impossible.
Uh-uh. But it's very odd. Well, they're not friend requests, they're friend suggestions. So Facebook will actually dip into my info. And that, see, this whole thing with the Facebook really seriously is it is the hive mentality. And what's interesting is we went, first it was MySpace, Facebook, and now they have just a litany of other sites that people go to, right? And
right.
It is all still the hive mentality, all of it. And the interesting thing is you can eliminate, like, one of the things I do is, like, I got no mercy. I block, I have a list of things that if you have, say, anything in support of certain things, if you're a racist, a bigot, a misogynist, a batterer who is unapologetic and is not reformed, a criminal of any type, bye-bye. And I don't even ask questions. If you make a comment.
To that list, I add, or a believer that any one religion is the cause of all the world's problems.
Well, that's kind of religious bigotry, right? So that's the thing. That is religious. That's still bigotry. Like, it gets back to this idea that we need different. I mean, I personally haven't got a clue what the for real answer is. People can believe they know what the real answer is, but until you're dead, you're not going to really know. It's just we're all sort of guessing and going on our gut level. And my guess is that whatever reality it is that we create, that's probably what's going to be real. I mean, who knows?
It's very interesting. We need each other and we need all the variations. And that is actually what causes progress. I mean, a lot of people don't realize, but what really created the West was when Genghis Khan fucking ruled the world because he united the East and the West, so that all of these ideas from both cultures took fire. And it's that way with everything. We need each other. We need differing opinions. I need the guy who looks me right in the eye and go, Ed, you're full of shit. I need that person. Because then I can look at them and go,
I don't think we need violence.
Well, that's an interesting viewpoint, but why don't you explain to me exactly what it is you're talking about? And then I can bring them out of that.
But I think what we really need to do is learn not to be at war. Like Pema Chodron wrote a really great book. She said, How to Be at Peace in Times of War. And I bought that book because of the Iraq War. It's a very small, thin book. Ironically, it is not about the war that men perpetrate. It's about our inner war. And that's what reflects outside. So once we get to that inner peace, the need for violence and domination subsides. So all of us can live in. And I think we're getting to the point because there's not going to be that
many.
We're
getting there. I mean, to be quite truthful, I think a lot of the, you're probably going to think I'm way off base on this, but I think a lot of the conflict in the Middle East and even between the Middle East and the West has to do with their unrelenting repression of women. They're a culture in absolute upheaval because they've taken one sex and tried to fucking push it into the ground, and that causes stress everywhere. And does it surprise me they're shooting each other? No. And it's like people that that tell me, oh, the Muslims are going to take over the world. They're united against us. And I go, really? So the Sunnis are united with the Shias? No.
Well, Ed, I got to push back a little bit on that, because the reason they're shooting each other is we are selling them weapons.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is, when you have this, like you said, the internal war, there's this war inside every Muslim man because he knows he's wrong. That's all.
Oh, I don't think they believe they're wrong. I think they believe we're wrong. How many men do you know in this country who say the problem with this country is we let women have the vote, or women are uppity?
I'm not talking about knowledge that is at the level of their awareness. I'm talking about knowledge in their heart. Okay? Everyone who tortures a person in their heart knows it's wrong. Yes, logically they may go, oh yeah, this is great, we're going to get information. But in their heart, they know it's wrong. And that's why the guys who have tortured the people ended up as bad off as the guys who were tortured.
Yeah.
Because there's parts of us we can't suppress.
Again, back to this hive mentality, right?
Exactly. You got it. Exactly. I mean, where could such behavior come from except hive mentality? Of like, oh yeah, let's take all of these people and do these horrible things to them because we think they're horrible. Nope, and you're right. I mean, our main goal in all of this, yes, our goal has to be to stop nuclear pollution, but to be quite truthful, I think we got to stop war before we even have a chance of dealing with that, since war and nuclear are so fucking tied together.
Well, I don't know if we're going to stop war until people change their values, until people really decide that they want to live in harmony. What did Einstein say? If everybody refused to pull the trigger, war would stop. The issue is not,
exactly. It's
not, if people just said, we're not doing it. No, we're going to find a different way to do this. But again, it's that hive mentality that we need to have it. I mean, Americans are acquiescing to cut out programs to help house people and to buy new homes because we have a, quote, higher priority to increase our military, because our military is so weak after all. I mean, that's what they're telling Congress.
Well, there's a backside. I know, but there's a backside to this too, taking away the hope of the house and the low income, et cetera. And that is, they've created what I call a funnel system. And that is, if you're a kid, the average kid, not the child of a wealthy, but if you're the average kid and you're going to graduate high school this year, it's like door number one, door number two, door number three. Okay, door number one is McDonald's, Walmart, and misery for the rest of your life at a minimum wage job. Door number two is making money, dealing drugs or something, and ending up in jail. Door number three is going to the military, where everything is taken care of, where you'll get BUCO benefits.
Well, there is door number four.
College.
Well, I guess, or maybe door number five. I guess there is the door of you can decide to do what you want to do and just.
I agree with you, and that's the door you and I took. But what I'm saying is, they create a funnel system. That's part of homogenization.
Yes.
And kids now really are looking at these very limited options where they've actually made military look like the best option.
I need to interrupt you. We have about 20 seconds left.
I want to thank you, Ed,
for being with us. Yeah. You can find Ed Oz at facebook.com, OZ. He's in Lowell, Oregon. I'm sure he'll be back.
Actually, I'm at facebook.com/Ed Osworth. But if you just type in Ed Oz, I since I have a lot of friends, I usually come up.
Okay. Put your courage feet on, you guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow.